Welcome again to Harmonicast, the podcast where we talk harmonicas, music, and life with great harp players. I'm a player myself, your host, Bob Kessler. And we will get to our latest conversation coming up. In a minute, we'll have beatbox harmonica man, musician, entertainer Yuri Lane. But here on the morning that I'm recording this introduction, I woke up, surfed the internet, and got the news about the passing of the great Toots Thielman. Sure, you've heard about it by now. He died at age 94 over the weekend. He retired from performing about 2 years ago, and I think many of us know he was really one of the main people to elevate the harmonica to being considered a serious instrument. Maybe not the first, the absolute first. I mean, Larry Adler comes to mind, but I do think Toots was probably the first guy to really be able to play bebop on it. And this is him playing from the early 80s with bass genius Jaco Pastorius, Three Views of a Secret, actually Jaco playing piano on this version of it, live version. But like a lot of great musicians and artists in your life, you know, Toots really, for me, he just showed up many times in my life. The first time, of course, was with the Sesame Street theme. We all remember that one. I, like most little kids in the late 70s, watched that show, and the sound of that theme just kind of set the tone for the show so perfectly. Years later, I remember seeing the video on TV for Leave a Tender Moment Alone, Billy Joel.
I want to introduce a friend of ours. This is a guy I went over to Paris just to get him on this next record. I think he's the best harmonica player in the world, Mr. Toots Thielman.
Oh, that's the Sesame Street guy. So it stuck in my head then. And then later in high school, I was watching Night Music with David Sanborn on NBC. Great show on Sunday nights. Where they had a killer band, but that's actually Toots playing alongside a metronome. He put out his Brazilian albums, early 90s, so I heard him then. And then in 2001, I got to see him live at the Blue Note Tokyo. I was with Ramsey Lewis. I was the executive producer of his morning show, and we had been doing a promotion with an airline, and they flew us over to Tokyo to do some of our radio shows there. And we were wondering, what's going on in Tokyo? And at the Blue Note, you know, we wanted to seize that opportunity, check out Toots Thielman, because he really didn't do a lot of touring in the U.S. I think he mostly stuck to European festivals and stuff. Certainly hadn't played Chicago, where I live, for many years. So it was really a privilege to see him. And I remember midway or maybe towards the end of the show, you know, he'd played this burning set. He's 80 years old. And great set of music, jazz, Brazilian, all this stuff. He was funny. And he said, you know, I feel like we're all. He said, what's the Japanese word for friends? And someone says, Tomodachi. He says, I feel like we're all Tomodachi. And he made this kind of gesture to include everyone, like he was giving us all a big sweeping hug. Afterwards, got to meet him, say hi. Somewhere in my files, I have a photographic print of myself with Toots Thielman. So I'm going to have to go dig that one out. But a lot of great memories and just such a huge catalog. I mean, I hope we all take a little time. I know I'm going to just go back and listen to Oscar Peterson and him playing with Bill Evans and Quincy Jones and Elis Regina and all these great people. So he will be certainly missed, but man, what a great legacy. So thank you, Toots. All right, we're going to get to our latest conversation with the great Yuri Lane, compelling performer, actor, activist, beatbox harmonica man, and vegetarian cook, and that is where our conversation picks up after we shared a vegetarian meal at his home in Chicago. That was good dinner you made there, Yuri.
Thank you. Thank you, Bob. I mean, I know that you enjoy the vegetarian styles.
I do.
Because, I mean, it's interesting because I've been really thinking a lot about food and music and how music can inspire food and vice versa. and food can inspire the music. And so I, you know, did this supper club in the Bay Area about a month ago, and I made sushi for 20 people in this Oakland home, and then I did this hour acoustic set.
Cool.
Yeah.
How long have you been a foodie?
Gosh, I've been a foodie since coming back from acting college and living in San Francisco. And so from my kind of my late teen years, I started cooking, and then after college, I started cooking for my friends, and I'd be like, can I cook for $10 and make, you know, a dollar a person, essentially. So a lot of pasta. Yeah, and I've just been a big foodie, and I'm the cook in the family, and so I pretty much make meals seven nights a week for the past, and now I've been with Rachel for 18, since 98, so.
You've been cooking for your family and your daughter, Delilah.
Delilah, that's right, so she's vegetarian, and Rachel's vegetarian, so. That's how I roll at home with the vegetarian styles. So
vegetarian sushi, talking rolls.
Vegetarian sushi is one of my
vegetarian
specialties.
Sushi's great.
Yeah, I don't know. It's one of my favorite foods because it's clean. There's seaweed, which I always love. There's rice, and then there's a pickled element, and then there's some sort of teriyaki veggie.
And so
styles.
Much is in the assembly. I've never made sushi, but in the putting it together.
It's very,
you know, it's got to stay together.
A lot of color combinations. It's very conceptual. It's got a really, it's got a just kind of a magic. You roll it up and then you cut it and then you have this beautiful design.
Yeah. How did it go in San Francisco? The sushi or the dinner party?
It was great. I did this performance, Tourette's Without Regrets, which is this guy, Jamie Kennedy. He is the great grandson of L. Ron Hubbard. And he's a real freak and movie director and wild character. And so he brought me to that performance, and this couple came and saw me perform. And then they started following me on Instagram and Facebook, and I always post all my dishes. And she's like, well, you're coming to San Francisco. Do you want to cook and perform? I'm like, yes. So made $300. They paid for all the ingredients. It was awesome.
Nice.
A chef happened to show up as one of the guests and just lent his skills and helped me roll sushi.
Roll, and then you
and then
roll
I
with
met
the beatbox.
Just different. There were some other musicians that were there, and Water Strider, this band member from Water Strider, and there he was really digging my music and just had my loop pedal and my little amp and my harmonicas and
nice.
Sweet.
But you're talking about the couple following you on Facebook and Instagram and everything, as do I. But you had a lot of success, if you want to talk about the terms of success being hits. So you had, I went to one of your beatbox videos, 10 million plus hits.
Yeah,
one of the ones. And so many people think, well, if I could just go viral, you know, with something. I mean, you went viral pretty early when that was even possible. I mean, YouTube.
I went viral early in the YouTube game, or like now, you know, going viral is like 50 million views or 60 million views, or, you know, Gangnam Style, a billion times. So yeah, in 2007, well, it started out 2007, 2008, I had my beatbox harmonica Final Cut video, sort of black and white video. This guy who was a filmmaker in Ohio reached out to me and said, hey, I saw your video, grainy video from this beatbox festival in Baltimore that I did. And that particular video like kind of went viral on MySpace. Remember MySpace?
Yeah, I do.
And then YouTube reached out, and then, you know, and then I uploaded it on YouTube and it went viral, and I came in second for the best music video in 2008, and Google flew me around the world. I went to different conferences and licensed some music for commercials, and it was a nice little run of a few years. But certainly things are different now in terms of how I use my videos. I'm not really into YouTube recently.
Yeah, how are they different?
Well, you know, I think it's different now. In order to really make money on YouTube, you need to have over 200,000 subscribers. So I've got 15 million views, which is great, and it's nice from trying to get gigs, or it's a nice number. But I make $11 a month on my ad revenue.
So it isn't quite the viral dream everyone thinks.
Exactly.
Like, just go
viral.
Yeah,
I mean, I did a solo beatbox play called MeTube, kind of making fun of how I became obsessed with my views but then the people who commented on my videos, you know, because back in 2008, from 2008 to 2011, 12, people were really into commenting. And now people don't really comment on videos. It's just not part of it. But I use those comments on all my videos as a script and sort of brought those. Who are these people behind these laptops who are all of a sudden your fiercest critics or your greatest fans?
I guess there's a lot of power in that, if you choose to tap into it as the person who's received the criticism.
There have been countless things that have come from my YouTube videos that people have been inspired to pick up the harmonica again.
Yeah.
And that has been just like, if I can give that gift to somebody, you know, I've also gotten messages saying I wasn't going through horrible cancer and I saw your videos and it made me happy. You know, those type of things make it all worth it.
They make up for the dark.
Yeah, the darkness. You know, once we put our videos up on the internet, we are being commodified somehow, right? And so some people are much better or who have that skill to really commodify their product or their brand or their content. But I still enjoy putting videos up, but I'm really more about posting it on Instagram, making a minute or less.
And do you let the criticism ones, which can be, you know, what are they, trolls and all that, do you just let it roll off your back? I mean, those can sometimes be, to some people I know, you know, they've been like physically threatened.
Yeah, well, I kind of haven't experienced that recently, I did get hacked last year, and that was horrible, and I learned some valuable lessons, like do your two-step phone verification, because now to this day, I cannot access my YouTube channel, because it is connected to Gmail. And so even at Google, where they should know who I am, and I am...
They flew you around the world.
They flew me around the world, they won't speak to me. A human will not speak to me, because I cannot fulfill the questions that they answer, because I don't have access to my inbox on my Gmail. Anyways, that being said, it's still a great form for exposure, you know?
Yeah.
And so it may not lead to, you know, a couple $100 a month or $1,500 a month or $5,000 a month. I end up getting gigs because people watch my videos.
Yeah, well, it's just the standard thing now. And, you know, everyone has to be on... Well, they don't have to be, but I think if you want to promote yourself, you got to be on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. Mm-hmm. You just got to do it. It's just part of
Twitter. You know, we had this conversation like, oh, should I, you know, try to teach the beatbox harmonica technique on YouTube? And then I'm thinking, well, you know, I feel I'm still such a student of the harmonica, and that like I'd rather teach the beatbox harmonica technique to someone physically, we're like together.
Yeah.
Instead of putting a series of videos to show people, because I also want to not protect what I do, because anyone can pick up a harmonica and then I tell them, like, you just explore. Because everyone beatboxes in a different way and everyone plays harmonica sometimes in different ways in which they breathe.
Oh, yeah.
So I kind of, I said, you know, let your imagination go wild. First play harmonica, then beatbox. Don't try to do it all at once at first.
But you beatboxed first, right?
Definitely. I'm really an actor first. You know, I was a child actor, so I did theater, television, film, commercials, radio, a bunch of industrial
videos. Did you do your first acting gig? How old were you?
I was 10. Young Frankenstein the 13th, a play.
This is a professional gig, not a school play. We're doing a real play.
This is a professional play.
Yeah.
But I got my big break as a young actor at American Conservatory Theater in a Woody Allen play floating light bulb, and that was just an amazing time. And then I started doing a sort of the young ingenue in San Francisco from age, 13 until 19.
But you have, whenever I've seen you, no matter where you are an absolutely fearless performer. It's like fear's not even on the table for you. You don't have to get rid of it because it never showed up. At least that's my experience of you. Has it always been like that for you?
That's a really good question. I think that certain times I've certainly been nervous. I mean, I always say that if you're not nervous, then something is not
something's
right.
A little off. Right.
Something's off.
Well, Ramsey Lewis, who I worked for and have still work for a bunch of years, he called it professional anticipation.
Professional anticipation.
Like that one.
And in show business too, you're waiting around. Like when I was on the Steve Harvey show, I was really nervous, not about getting up in front of live TV or having a big studio audience. I just got nervous just waiting. Waiting for 3 hours before I have my 2 minutes or whatever.
And you got that. I think this is an example of your fearlessness. Didn't you come up to Steve Harvey in a restaurant in Chicago and say, hey, Steve, put me on your show?
All the credit to Rachel.
Your
because
wife.
Because we were celebrating our 13-year wedding anniversary. We went and saw the James Brown film. And we went to Karen's on Greens, which is now no longer there. But it was this sort of high-end vegan restaurant. And Steve Harvey was there with his a couple of his boys. Yeah. And they're all flossed out in their zoot suits,
nice.
And their hats. And I went to the bathroom and I came back. I said, Rachel, Steve Harvey's here. And she said, well, go out to him. Because a year and a half previous to that, they had contacted me. And they're like, hey, we'd like you to be on the show. And I said, oh, that sounds great. And I said, but I'm in the UK. They said, well, thanks. When you come back, talk to us. Then I came back and reached out to a producer, and then they asked my age. I was like, gave my age, and then they never contacted me.
Oh, man.
So,
were they wanting somebody in their 20s or something?
I think they wanted someone younger for that particular.
Okay.
Who knows? Yeah. It's always.
You're so young looking.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. And so I was like, ageists, whatever. And then so I'm sitting there and I'm like, Rachel's like, go out to him. I'm like, I don't want to bother him. People, famous people, they just want to sit down and hang out. And she looks at me and she says, what would James Brown do? And I said, get up off my back.
WWJB do.
That precious. So I got on up, went up to him. He's about to leave. And I was like, started beatboxing. And he kind of looked at me. And he was really into it, and his friends, they were totally into it, and they started big old smile on their faces, because you look at me and you just don't think that beatbox is going to come out of my mouth, which is always, I've always used to my advantage, being a little hip-hop Jew hippie from the Haight-Ashbury, And then he said, oh, well, all right, I said, I tried to get on your show, boom, 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 and kind of just explained in 20 seconds that I had a time, and he said, all right. You tell them, which I guess meant the Steve Harvey show, you tell them that we met on Karen's on Green. You tell them that. So I reached out to this other producer, and then, fast forward in different meetings, I got on the show. So, Steve Harvey, it's all about redemption. His whole thing is all about redemption and these redemptive acts. So he definitely remembered me. He thought we met in New York, but it didn't matter. It was fine.
I get the impression he's a pretty spiritual guy.
Yeah, he becomes a big heart, but a preacher on the show.
Yeah.
The show is him talking about Jesus. It's pretty intense. Now, they didn't, a lot of the stuff that when he's speaking about Jesus, they don't air.
It doesn't make it air.
It doesn't make it air.
Well, there's that thing that went viral of him talking to the Family Feud audience, basically being a motivational speaker, just do it, was basically,
Yeah.
And.
But his all, if you just pick yourself off your bootstraps, you'll succeed. If you'll just be subservient to men, you'll succeed. That's kind of problematic. But this is also television. He's a talk show host. He's a best-selling relationship guru and who's been divorced 3 times.
Complicated guy.
But Steve, I give him mad props. No, I think he's just always wrestling, and I think he's a really good radio personality too. I've heard his radio show. He's funny. He's quick.
Funny. Oh man,
he's off the cuff.
Kings of Comedy is. He's awesome in that.
He is.
He's great in that.
He really is.
All right, so you gave us a little sample of the beatbox a second ago. When you got into it, was it new at the time that you got into it? Was it a new way of performing? I mean, what are its roots? Is it Bobby McFerrin, even Al Jarreau, that kind of vocal?
Well,
the roots of
beatbox. When we talk about modern day beatbox, we think of a couple of beatboxers. One being Buffy from the Fat Boys. Was one of the first beatboxers to really get a lot of exposure.
So that's like early 80s, maybe mm-hmm. he got going yep. late 70s?
Early 80s. But in the 70s, there were some beatboxers. But really in the early 80s, during the birth of hip-hop, but a little bit later, late 70s into the early 80s. And they used to have beatbox battles. So there's Buffy from the Fat Boys. And then there is Dougie Fresh, right? And so those two are like the big beatboxers that kind of brought it out into the mainstream. Slick Rick and Dougie Fresh did a song, 6 minutes, and it's beatbox and rap. And it's still, to this day, one of the only beatbox and rap collaborations that was a hit. So we're still searching for that. And then, so beatbox is really part of one of the elements of hip hop.
Yeah.
And people have been trying to emulate instruments and emulate the sounds of animals. We can go back a couple thousand years to the Greek plays, and people were doing sound folly of the different animals that were in the play, and they do the sound effects. From the Greek, from the campfires to early humans to Greek tragedies to jazz and scatters vocalizing, doing the sounds of trumpets and the sounds of different instruments. And that kind of, was always there. Kind of always in the background, and people, Al Jarreau, I saw a YouTube video of him, just like the vocal genius, and him doing sort of a beatbox, but not really. Then kind of going into the police academy, and Michael Winslow was discovered, and he is a master sound effects technician and beatboxer.
I don't think he gets his due. I think people kind of
he
think
has
of
got
him,
his due.
Really, I think publicly.
People in the beatbox world.
In the beatbox world, but in the public, the general public, they see, he was that police, the goofy guy from Police Academy.
He made those movies, straight up.
But I mean, I see him as a serious artist.
He's an incredible artist.
But I don't
artist.
Think a lot of people do. Beatboxers do. But,
and I think that maybe one of the reasons why is because he's always navigated more towards the comedy world. When he tours, he does comedy shows.
Yeah.
And so maybe they look at it it's still part of that party trick, or it's like a vehicle that you use to make people laugh. But there's a video of him. He can do the vocal guitar like nobody's business. And he uses some effects a little bit, but he does Jimi Hendrix, Star Spangled Banner. To the T. You're just like, that's done by a human. So then there's him, right? Yeah. Then Bobby McFerrin. And I had the, I was blessed to grow up in San Francisco. And so I got to see Bobby McFerrin, met him a couple times.
Serious cat.
A big inspiration to me, the way in which he, is this like, he has this 3.5 octave range and how he uses improvisation. He doesn't even know what he's going to do when he goes out and perform in front of thousands of people. Now he has many, many songs in his head and all this, but the way in which he thinks about music and being a conductor, and me being the son of a violinist, my mom's a violinist, and so had that classical approach. And then Razel. Razel became famous. He was a beatboxer with The Roots, the band The Roots. And he became the godfather of noise. And so he's known for where he would beatbox.
Right. Now that's just one person. Okay. That I think is
part of the cool part of it. Even now I'm sitting here and I'm looking at one person making the sound, but I'm hearing more than one thing going on at a time. And
beatbox,
it's all voice.
Is magic. Where is that sound coming from? And that's what the harmonica and the beatbox are so similar, in that you've got this reed instrument that you stick in your mouth and then you can't really see how you're doing it. Right? Yeah. And with beatbox, it's the same way.
Yeah.
You know?
So when did you get the idea to bring the two together, harp and the beatbox?
Well, it actually goes back to acting college. We were doing Henry V, and each group of the first
this
year,
going?
someone had a harmonica, and like for an intro, I did a little beatboxing into the harmonica. And like everyone's like, oh, that's really cool. And I was like, oh, that is kind of cool. I just kind of came up with it. Then fast forward to this show that I did in San Francisco called Soundtrack City. And one of the characters, Leopold, he's this homeless guy who plays harmonica. And he's all about telling everyone just to listen to the world around you. You can learn a lot by just listening. And then I go into this little beatbox harmonica, a little riff. And everyone started clapping like a hoedown. Everyone just loved it. And everyone started smiling. And I was like, well, that's really cool. I have to maybe actually learn how to play the harmonica, you know? And then, of course, my wife Rachel got a gig as a professor at UIC. And we
University moved, of Illinois, Chicago.
Yeah, we moved to Chicago in 2003. And that was kind of the beginning of coming to the Mecca of harmonica players.
We got a few, right?
I mean, it's long Howard Levy. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Yeah. It's just incredible, you know, from the greats. So I had a friend, Doug Fogelson, who's a nice harmonica player.
And
amazing artist. And he kind of took me under his wing. He's like, all right, don't beatbox into the harmonica. Just play one keyhole. Just blow into one keyhole. And so we started to simply play. And I took a class at Old Town School of Music incognito, not saying that I'm a beatboxer.
Yeah.
Just trying to learn the basics of harmonica. But I've actually, over the years, have certainly gotten better at playing harmonica. And I think that one of the things that happened a couple years ago is I was doing the show MeTube, and it didn't get very good reviews. It was kind of my first play that they appreciated my talents but didn't like the show. And beatbox harmonica is definitely a big part of the show because it's about me going viral and the experiences. And I felt the blues for the first time. I felt the blues inside of me. And so since that time, I started playing and expressing myself through the harmonica, as opposed to playing the harmonica, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Like it became a vehicle for expressing the heartache or the angst that I had that something wasn't going that well. And then I was like, well, this is what the blues feels like, straight up. And then that started like, and then I'm like, oh, you know, the bending of the notes became a little cleaner, and each year I kind of go, oh my gosh, why was I not using that tongue-locking technique? And now I'm becoming less and less reliant on just doing beatbox harmonica, you know, with the loop pedal, just playing harmonica, then bringing in the beatbox harmonica.
Yeah.
I've recently, in the past 6 months, have been doing that, starting my set, if I'm doing a music set, to just play harmonica. Don't do any beatbox. Don't start out with something like that. Just show them that you can play and that you got some chops, and also that the way in which I play is a little different than others. And then when the beatbox harmonica element kind of comes together, like as Joe Felisco says, like, yeah, man, we need that boom.
Yeah.
And like I teach harmonica through the throat, and that's kind of how it's a lot coming through the throat. The throat's a big part of it, and sometimes people forget about that. So,
well, show us a thing or two.
Ha!
little steam train homage in there?
Yeah.
Okay.
The harmonica, like the guy's really kind of trying to emulate the sounds of the train. And so the My Beatbox harmonica technique is definitely going back to the chugging.
Yeah, yeah. Chugging, all that really solid rhythmic playing. Guys like Peter Madcath does a lot of that. His thing, I remember seeing a video of him, you know, talking about what syllables you should do to get good rhythm. So did you have to sit down and figure out, and okay, if I make the beat here, I'm exhaling, and but then I want to inhale with the note, or did it all just kind of come together and just like this natural kind of state?
It was more like for the like kind of the beginning, early years of the beatbox harmonica, it was more about on the exhale. And so the exhale is not necessarily the blues sound.
Right, not usually.
So that was always the challenge. Like when, you know, because you can, right? Out.
So that's an exhale, yeah.
How are you going to get it?
Yeah, how do you do it?
And I think it's more about you play the inhale and then you kind of, in the, you know, you can go, right? You can.
Mouth percussion stuff, yeah.
But I think you just need to, on the inhale, you just got to do it. You got to play and not beatbox. But you have to intersperse it.
Not beatbox for a few milliseconds. Because
yeah, exactly.
You are beatboxing, it's just not at that very
moment. Yeah, yeah.
It's
and
a
so
mind
it's
blower,
a suspension
yeah.
of disbelief too, you know. Like you, sometimes you think you're hearing something, but it's like, with especially with beatboxing and talking at the same time. Now they actually have coined it as beat rhyming, so you can beatbox and rhyme one time. Bob Kessler, you heard, you know, I heard you in Johannesburg, right? So people are beatboxing and rapping at the same time. People are beatboxing and singing at the same. Same time. It's so interesting because the other people are using other instruments as an extension.
Yeah, there's a sax guy in town that I found out about because of you.
Yeah,
I forget his name.
Together.
But it was pretty awesome.
Yeah. But like if for all those saxophone players out there, like you have to use your tongue. So it's a different type of beatbox.
Yep.
I want him to he needs to take a couple of lessons because his beatboxing, like, it's come out that, like, he needs some more. But then I think it's because it's tongue. Like, there's certain things you just cannot do when you're playing the saxophone and the tongue.
And you teach kids.
I do. I've been teaching beatbox and hip-hop theater improvisation for the past 20 years.
You know, they say that you learn by teaching, so what do they teach you?
What do kids teach me?
Yeah.
Well, they certainly teach me that childlike fascination with the world and being able to just express themselves freely and always stay connected with that childlike, because the beatbox is very rooted in the language of babies. It's all like they're developing language and starting to beatbox, essentially. And that, so what I learned from kids is that they are young philosophers. Sometimes they observe the world in a way that is so different than when you are an adult. And so they're very open. It's also, it can just be really challenging. But kids really kind of connect to what I'm doing, and I kind of free them up their inhibitions that they have. Now my third graders are some of my favorite students, but then I love the college age because they've taken music or they've taken like years of acting, so I don't have to start from scratch with them. And kind of seeing them over the years at different camps and seeing them age is really kind of special. But I think it's that kids are just really ready to go for it. And they can teach you a lot about your own artistry and, you know, your own level of patience. And it's been really awesome to work with my daughter, Delilah. And so I've
she's got the bug. Yep.
She's got the total bug, and how we really have to practice together, because I need to make sure to do the same type of beatbox, and that and that we, you know, that it, we're on the same page, and that as a solo performer, like, okay, everyone's watching you, and that if you mess up, you mess up. But if you mess up and your daughter's on stage, then you're going to make your daughter look bad.
Nobody wants that.
No one wants that. And then, and just having a blast, you know, performing with kids.
So she's a singer, your daughter.
She's a singer, dancer,
so
actor.
Far.
She's got the triple threat.
Yeah.
And classical Indian dance, so she can do Bollywood if she just so
desires. And she is how old?
She's 8 years old.
8 years old going on.
She's 8 going on sometimes 11. But she's also just so funny and so smart. And really very kind. So I hope that makes me the most proud, really. Being kind and sensitive and a good person. And that kids also, another thing about kids, because I've been doing some interfaith work the past 2 years, and that, you know, the kids, when they learn about other faiths or learn about other people in of different ethnicities and different color, there's no racism at a certain age. And so
you haven't learned it yet.
Haven't learned it yet. And so that's what makes me realize it's taught. So if you teach your children hate, if you teach your children to not be acceptable, you know, to not accept people based on who they are, then that's what's going to happen. So that's kind of, you know, that you can be really impactful to kids. And sometimes it's frustrating, but then if I've reached one or two kids, everything is, it's worth everything.
Nice. Now, there's a pretty strong beatbox community. You're also part of the harmonica community. That's a lot of our listeners are part of that, but what do you think of the beatbox community and the harmonica community? Are they similar in any way?
I think that they're similar in that from what I get is that harmonica players they're pretty supportive of other harmonica players. Sometimes. All right. So.
Well, the joke is, what did the one harmonica player say to the other one? I bet I'm better than you. So there is a little bit of that gunslinger.
Okay,
mentality.
So all right, so
at least it kind of in blues more, but
yeah,
it's going away. That, I mean, you're not going to find that in a Joe Felisco class at the Old Town School, but that kind of has been a thing for a while. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and also,
but there's also support. It's an incredibly
supportive
community.
You know what? The harmonica
world.
And the beatbox are
nice
similar in that, like, you know, everyone's like, ooh, a harmonica. Yeah, I'm into that. All right, I don't want to hear that much of it. Beatbox. Oh, that's really cool. I want that beatbox. That's cool. All right. And so, you know, sometimes the harmonica player, like, oh, you get that solo and then you're done. And now I think the harmonica and the beatboxer are a lot more elevated within music now. Like, you hear it a lot more. And so the beatbox community is extremely competitive. You're right. It's a worldwide community, like the harmonica community. The championships are in Berlin. You've got Hohner Harmonica, which is my sponsor, right? And they're out of
Trossingen, yeah.
They're out of Germany. And then you have different beatboxers from all around the world with different techniques. The American beatbox community right now is just taking it to a whole other level. They've been the last two, like, world champions. And for a long time, for about 10 years, Europe just had the lockdown on the competitions and kind of taking the art form really from drum and bass now to dubstep. And so there are so many beatboxers now emulating the sounds of dubstep, which is really a music that is taking kind of hip-hop, ska, reggae, and then giving it like all these like 8-bit, 808 crazy bass waiting for the drop, right? And that humans and beatboxers can emulate those sounds. All these sort of deep, resonant, you know, almost like tube and throat singing. Beatbox has really, in terms of technique, gone a lot farther in the past couple years, where cats are doing reverse lip rolls and different sounds that I can't make, which is exciting to me, and I want to make those sounds. I'm not like, yeah, I'm jealous of it, but I want to learn. And then, but what I have with the beatbox harmonica, and also me being a beatboxer that does beatbox in a different way, even when there was other people beatboxing, I had a different technique. I developed my own style, my own technique. No one taught me how to do it.
Yeah.
And now people are being taught how to beatbox, which is very different than 15 years ago.
Same with harmonica, and it's that same thing. Right. Everyone has a personal approach to the music, but then there's also learning from the collective.
But
so
I've,
it's both things at once, things moving both the internal and external directions, and I think that's what makes a great community.
You're right. And also just like, you know, connecting with you and getting more involved in the local Chicago harmonica community and us doing collaborations
yeah.
and performing. And also, harmonica players have been really open to my style and my technique. But I felt like the past couple of years, I feel like I have a little bit more to offer in terms of playing. So I'm not as afraid just to like jam and play with other yeah. harmonica players, you know? And I'm like, hey, I'm getting a little bit better. Like, and then when you hear yourself, you know, from 5 years ago, you're like, oh, I don't know if I can listen to that from 5 years ago. But
I think that's common among many art forms.
It is, totally yeah. is. I mean, it's also your own perception of yeah. how you're hearing
yeah.
it. But yeah, the beatbox community and the harmonica community are so similar in that they're portable instruments. You take yeah. it wherever you go. And that is something. Did you hear Tim Kaine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
you
of course.
It. Oh, I mean, I was like, that's my
I
vice
posted
president
it.
Right there.
I posted it. It's been posted on
yeah,
my
posted
pages.
It.
Well,
because
it's been posted in every direction. But I learned it because of a million other people. Yeah.
And that's just so awesome. And then you know, now I mean, I've been doing some research on the history of the harmonica and the harmonicas through history. You know, like they passed out the harmonicas during the Civil War to both sides. So they could play their patriotic songs.
No, I never knew that.
So like they got their kit, right? And each kit was a harmonica.
Really?
Yeah.
I never knew that.
Yeah. And then I'm like, okay, you know, yeah. where does the harmonica come from? I'm going back to the Sheng, the Chinese,
yep.
You know, crazy mouth mm-hmm. organ, you know? I want to pick up one of those and try to beatbox into it, but it's different.
That would be awesome. Yeah, because you use your fingers to activate the reeds. Yeah. Well, what's next for you?
Well, I've really been curating these shows. I started this collective company collective, Chicago Beatbox Limited. So I've been curating these shows where I have about 5 beatboxers, old school, new school, Asian, African-American, very diverse in that the different performers are different ages. And then I have different hip hop artists that join the different performances that I do. So I'll have a tap dancer, and then I'll collaborate with a tap dancer, opera singer, DJ, musicians, b-boys, b-girls. And anyone can join the collective, but it's definitely beatbox centric. But I'm really about taking beatbox and having it complement other music. And so the collaborative aspect of beatbox. And so then I'll have a curate a whole performance and I'll be the host. I'll perform with some of the features and then I conduct a beatbox symphony at the end. So on the 26th and 27th of August, I'm gonna be performing with Collaboration Theater, which is doing a festival called Peace Book, which is all about trying to find ways of making peace in Chicago through performance, so the 7-minute performances. So I'll be at Clarendon Park performing a 7-minute beatbox symphony with my Chicago Beatbox Limited crew. And so we're gonna do a whole beatbox group piece with the theme of peace and how can we make peace. And that's what's kind of next for me. And I'm, you know, I really wanna come out with another mixtape and kind of come out with a different feeling for the music. I've really been taking my looping, live looping, and storing my music and finding new ways to sort of create a song live and then remix it live and become the DJ as well. And then having, you know, 6 or 7 harmonicas in front of me and kind of playing with the low harmonicas, you know, create the groove, the low harmonica, and then solo with, you know, in C, and that's been just really sweet. And then I've actually decided that, you know, I started out as a professional actor and I've still been doing solo beatbox plays for the past 15 years, but I want to get back into acting. I want to get back into doing a play and maybe being a part of an ensemble.
Cool.
As opposed
well, it's good theater town here.
It's
you
a great
can make
town.
A living at
yeah.
it.
Yeah, and then also being theater. A stage dad to my daughter, and that mm-hmm. really making it possible for her to get opportunities to do theater, to do nice. Live theater.
Should we play out with something from the last Beatbox mixtape? Which cut should we do?
I like the, I think Blues Hop is kind of fun.
Yuri, always a pleasure to hang with you.
Yeah, Bob, it's so great to eat together,
yes.
break bread together.
Man can burn. You know how to cook.
You know, I really love to cook. And so, yeah, I want to continue to take my skills as a cook and also as a performer, and that both are performative, right? And so, bring me to your home, I'll cook an incredible dinner, and then I'll do a music set.
All right, I'm a witness to both.
Yes, he's been a witness.
Shake your booty and do that right. Yeah.
The always entertaining and insightful harmonica beatbox man, Yuri Lane. And of course, you can check him out Facebook, Instagram, his YouTube channel, of course. I'm Bob Kessler. Thanks a lot for listening and subscribing and for the emails and for everything else. I'm on Facebook. It's BobKesslerHarmonica.com, WGN+, of course, iTunes. That's where you can listen to now. We got more than a dozen of these, so thanks for all the support, everyone. Keep the faith, happy harping, and we'll see you next time on HarmonicaCast.